You're listening to the Diplomats Asia Geopolitics Podcast. I'm Katie Putz, recording in Washington, D.C.
And this is Ankit Panda, also recording in Washington, D.C.
How you doing, Ankit?
Doing well, Katie. Good to be back with you.
All right. Yes, we are back. So last week, Pakistan and Saudi Arabia announced that they had upgraded their existing bilateral security relationship with a strategic mutual defense agreement, which states, among other things, that any aggression against either country shall be considered an aggression against both. Ankit, let's get into this. You know, what is the wider context for this agreement? Did anybody see this coming? And what are the implications?
Yeah, no. So in terms of anybody seeing this coming, I'd say yes and no, in the sense that something like this has been on the table among at least analysts for a long time. I mean, more than a couple decades. I think people have wondered if Pakistan and Saudi Arabia, particularly after 1998, when Pakistan and India both tested nuclear weapons, if they would look to formalize any kind of defense agreement or pact. There's been a lot of kind of anxiety in India that Pakistan's nuclear weapons could be made available to the Pakistanis, which is one of the dimensions that is being hotly debated about this particular pact and agreement. So that's the general background. But then the specific timing here, I think, was generally something that caught a lot of people off guard. There weren't really good public indicators that this was something that had been underway behind the scenes. A lot of the press coverage, pegged this agreement to the recent Israeli strikes on Qatar, which took place just, I think, less than 2 weeks prior to this announcement. But of course, agreements like this don't come together in just a couple weeks. This has been something that's been in the works for a longer time. So we don't actually, So I think people were caught off guard. And the big question now is, why is this happening? The Saudis in particular, if we go back to May when we had a major skirmish between India and Pakistan that we talked about on this podcast, the Saudis were trying to play the role of an honest broker between India and Pakistan. You know, even before the United States got involved, it was really Saudi Arabia that was the most determined, at least publicly, attempted mediator between New Delhi and Islamabad. And so now with this mutual defense pact, I think it's also going to cause a bit of a rethink in India about its relationship with Saudi Arabia. So that's, I think, the broader geopolitical context that I'd emphasize at the top end.
Great. So, I think for Saudi Arabia, would you agree that sort of the agreement kind of lends the protection of a nuclear power to Saudi Arabia? What does Pakistan get out of this agreement? And is that what Saudi Arabia gets out of this? I'm curious, why? Obviously, the question is why now, which we've addressed, but why and what is it that they expect to see out of this agreement?
Yeah, so this question is, I think, the key in many ways, because there's actually been quotes back and forth from Pakistan's own defense minister, Khwaja Asif, who's known for doing this. He tends to contradict himself publicly, and he's done that on the nuclear question. So, he's clarified that the nuclear umbrella was not on the radar, but then I think the very same day or just one day earlier, he said, "Let me make one point clear about Pakistan's nuclear capability. That capability was established long ago when we conducted tests. Since then, we have forces trained for the battlefield. What we have and the capabilities we possess will be made available to Saudi Arabia, according to this agreement." So that's pretty categorical. And then Reuters, at least, quoted a Saudi official in their story announcing this defense pact that said this is a, asked whether there's a nuclear dimension to this. The Saudi official says this is a comprehensive defense agreement that encompasses all military means. So again, very much indicators on both sides that this covers nuclear capabilities. The thing is, the term nuclear umbrella that's sometimes used to describe U.S. alliance relationships is strange because many, the U.S. treaty alliances that we have don't actually mention nuclear weapons explicitly. It's just presumed that all military capabilities will be used to extend deterrence. And I think that's kind of the approach that they've taken here. And then, you asked what the Pakistanis get out of this. So Pakistan has long benefited from a close relationship with Saudi Arabia, particularly financially. That's the simplest kind of quid pro quo. Pakistan's fiscal situation remains worse than ever, and having Saudi Arabia essentially committed to the country's success is going to be long term, I think, a boon to both the Pakistani civilian government and, more importantly, the military, which remains dominant in Pakistan. And so that, too, I think, is an important part of the quid pro quo.
Next, I kind of want to talk a little bit more about the deterrent value of nuclear weapons. You know, we saw India and Pakistan get pretty close to the brink of war. Some would argue it was a four-day war earlier this year. Obviously, both sides having nuclear weapons didn't deter either of them from approaching that brink. So my question is, you know, are nuclear weapons enough to ensure security? You know, do they have that deterrent value? We sort of assume that they have. And, you know, or are they just singularly not enough? You know, nuclear weapons in a vacuum are not enough to guarantee that security. And we've seen plenty of conflicts between various powers that have or don't have nuclear weapons. So I'm curious your sort of reflections on nuclear deterrence in this day and age.
Yeah. So, you know, the question is, what are you trying to deter? And some things are more credible, right? Nuclear weapons are pretty good at deterring threats to the existence of your country, which don't come around every day, but those seem like a pretty, you know, countries that possess nuclear weapons don't generally get attacked in a massive way. But you're right. I mean, I think just this year we've seen some interesting examples. You talked about India and Pakistan. The Israel-Iran skirmish was also notable for, you know, Israel has nuclear weapons and the Iranians carried out the largest attack on a nuclear armed country's homeland, right? They launched hundreds of ballistic missiles at Israel in the course of that war. So the Israelis were unable to deter that particular attack, at least as a result of their nuclear capabilities. And again, the Israelis are opaque about their nuclear weapons, so they're not trying to message. But, you know, when we come to this Saudi-Pakistani agreement, I think the most important thing to remember is that this is extended deterrence, which is even harder, right? This is something that the United States struggles with constantly, which is and, you know, for the U.S., it's even more difficult because the U.S. is trying to extend its nuclear deterrent to countries in East Asia, countries in Europe, across literal oceans, and basically communicate to these countries that the U.S. would be willing to run the risk of a significant conflict, including a nuclear conflict, to defend these countries with U.S. nuclear weapons if needed. Pakistan, in a way, is getting into this business with Saudi Arabia. And so one of the big questions that's been debated so far is, who are the Saudis interested in deterring, right? Is this about Israel, as some of the press reports suggested, which has nuclear weapons? Is this about Iran, a country that has had difficult relations with Saudi Arabia and A, might acquire nuclear weapons in not too long from now, and B, the Saudi crown prince has said Saudi Arabia would seek nuclear weapons of its own if that were to happen? So I think that's been left open. And the answer is, you know, all of the above in a way. But the question that, you know, I think I still go back and forth on is, I mean, the credibility of this seems rather questionable to me. You know, this idea that Pakistan would take these remarkable risks on Saudi Arabia's behalf. There is a political component here that this is a show of solidarity by the only nuclear-armed Islamic country for Saudi Arabia, right? There is that element of kind of solidarity there. The current Pakistani army chief, General Munir, is also, I think, positively disposed towards this kind of pan-Islamic solidarity concept. But the deterrence value, I think, is pretty questionable at the moment. I will say, though, you know, what's interesting to me is, you know, someone that thinks about Pakistan's nuclear weapons and has for a while, is that, you know, for the longest time, Pakistani analysts and officials would sort of point to Pakistan's nuclear capabilities really just being India-specific. They were like, anything that Pakistan builds is all about India, which remains India, you know, Pakistan's primary security threat. Now with this Saudi defense pact, I think that becomes a lot more difficult to kind of make credible because like Pakistan will now necessarily have to think about other types of scenarios, including, you know, there's a whole debate now about long-range Pakistani ballistic missiles, which were for a while seen as necessary to hold targets in the Indian Ocean like the Andaman and Nicobar Islands at risk. But now, you know, those would be the same kinds of missiles that could range Israel, at least. And then the Iran situation is also, I think, more complex, and that's maybe worth pulling out a little bit because Iran and Pakistan are not adversaries. But, you know, Pakistan's been trying to kind of triangulate this thing with Saudi Arabia and Iran for a while.
There is, you know, a complex web of relationships when you look at Pakistan, India, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Israel, and you can kind of draw a lot of lines between them, I think, in some ways that sometimes see a little contradictory, right? India has good relations with Israel, but has also had good relations with Saudi Arabia, Iran. There are several sort of points you can sort of indicate in that complex web. And so I'm curious now to kind of pull on both the Iran angle, but also get into discussing India and India's reception of this announcement and what, if anything, we've seen India do after this announcement.
Yeah, so on the Indian side, there's been a lot of commentary. You know, a lot of kind of former officials, prominent analysts have been surprised and I think have reacted negatively, saying that this is a big mistake by Saudi Arabia. It's going to harm Indian national security. On the other side, you know, you have the view that this is more out of, you know, this is more an expression of Pakistani weakness in a way than Pakistani strength. I think the interesting question going forward is, you know, will this actually bear on India's engagement in the region? Because India has been able to engage relatively well in a multi-aligned way in the Middle East, good relations with Israel, good relations with Saudi Arabia to date. So how much will this actually turn into a significant setback to India-Saudi Arabia ties, I think, remains an open question. I think the Saudis will be pretty keen to communicate to the Indians that this is, you know, part of their independent foreign policy and not directly intended to threaten India at all. And I think that's pretty credible. I don't think Saudi Arabia has any reason to, you know, get drawn into an India-Pakistan conflict, right? Because this is a two-way mutual defense pact. Both countries have to defend the other against an armed attack. So that's kind of the situation at the moment. But, you know, this is still very new. So we'll have to wait and see where India takes its broader foreign policy approach in the Middle East in the coming weeks and months.
You mentioned this earlier, the credibility of the fulfillment of this agreement if a situation develops, right? If we saw a similar situation to what happened in Kashmir in I guess that was May, which we discussed in an earlier episode of this podcast, in which India struck Pakistan, on paper, right, that obligates Saudi Arabia to be part of a response. Now, I've seen sort of there are plenty of examples of various kinds of mutual defense agreements in which one side is like, that one doesn't count and nothing happens. But I'm curious to sort of think through what would that look like?
Yeah. So, look, I mean, you know, Saudi Arabia does spend quite a bit on national defense, but it doesn't have expeditionary capabilities, right? So it's not like the Saudis are going to get involved in that. And so I think it's much more likely that essentially, the agreement fizzles in that particular type of scenario. The more interesting one is the case in which Saudi Arabia is attacked. What are Pakistan's broader obligations, right? I mean, it would be politically and diplomatically impossible to have a truly one-sided defense pact, right? The standard language is to include the language of collective defense, that any attack on one is an attack on both or all. And so they've gone with that. But really, I mean, to me, this does seem like the Saudis picking up insurance, essentially, via Pakistan.
All right. And then I have one more sort of final question related to this. You hinted at it earlier, but the possibility of nuclear proliferation via an agreement like this. Saudi Arabia's leaders at various points have suggested they might pursue nuclear weapons, particularly in the case that Iran does. So I'm curious your thoughts on the risks.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot here. I mean, in a way, you could even pitch this entire agreement as a perverse sort of non-proliferation measure, right? By extending deterrence, the Saudis now have less of an incentive to seek their own nuclear weapons if the Iranians build nuclear weapons, for instance. I've always been a skeptic of the idea that Pakistan would transfer nuclear weapons to Saudi Arabia. I just don't think that makes a lot of sense for Pakistan, right? They tend to be extremely sensitive to the specific numbers of weapons available and the capabilities they have to deter India. That said, you know, technical cooperation could be a possibility. The Saudis, of course, remain in the non-proliferation treaty, so they're legally barred from seeking nuclear weapons. So they'd have to either covertly try to seek nuclear weapons within the treaty, which would really spark a major crisis, or they'd have to formally leave the treaty and pursue capabilities of their own. What I will say, though, is I think for at least the United States, which was under the Biden administration contemplating the possibility of transferring uranium enrichment technology to Saudi Arabia, I'm really curious longer term if the ways in which this agreement manifests will at least make the idea that Saudi Arabia is less likely to seek nuclear weapons of its own more credible. So I think that's actually a pretty interesting question going forward. But I don't think we're out of the woods in terms of Saudi proliferation risk just yet.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will be paying attention. As always, thank you, Ankit, for joining me to discuss. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in to the Diplomat's Asia Geopolitics podcast. If you like what you heard, please make sure to subscribe on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, so you don't miss future episodes. And you can now also watch these episodes on YouTube channel, if that is your vibe. Remember, you can always get in touch with Ankit or myself with episode suggestions or questions. We'll be back soon with more.